be more helpful, but so the question is, you had to go to the rate control menu in order to change frequencies. You just couldn't click on the spectrum and make it work. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Why don't you post what version you're working on, and also that question on the contact group. Maybe someone will pick it up.
Okay, will do. Back to that 7-3, by the way.
Alrighty. Moving right along. W2PDQ. Rich, your comment. W2PDQ, K2BAR. Alright. Just because I'm going to check. Noel, do you have a question or a comment?
No, but I have a question. K2QBV Mobile.
Joel, go right ahead.
How informal then that is. I saw you advertising a tire on a car or a truck. Did you sell that thing?
Yeah. Tomorrow someone's going to pick up the tower and Clunker Junkers is going to pick up the truck, unless somebody else has a better answer.
Hey, now I read them over. I'm trying to find a 5-inch monitor. So I was reading everything and came across what you did.
Yeah, it's going to be a few years before I can have another vehicle heavy enough to accommodate that tower, and I just don't want it to sit. I'm a little at 6s and 7s about it because I have not been able to find another one. And I even looked at World War II, or should we say military vehicle radio groups. There are several. And WW2VEH, Fred Schlesinger, and others have guided me very generously through that. And lots of people have responded, but they have never seen one. And it does have German markings on it, but my guess is it came off of a custom commo shelter. It was built in the 1960s or early 70s, or was on an M114 command half track, or command APC. But again, probably something custom, or maybe an evaluation unit. It was done during a period where I know NATO was screaming and yelling, the NATO partners were screaming and yelling that the U.S. was dominating the provisioning of many elements of the NATO military, and they wanted to see the dollars flow in other directions. So this may have been part of an evaluation process that just never saw the light of day on the U.S. side. But I have one, and God, it's a wonderful unit, but it's going to be a few years before I have anything heavy enough to really support that. You know, Jeremy's got to finish high school and get at least 2 years of college under his belt before I can think about doing that kind of stuff in a really heavy-duty mode. But we'll see. You never know. But thank you for asking. And I actually took out the bench tonight, took out the radio, took off the roof rack. I did all that tonight in about 2 hours. Not to be overly violative of my own HIPAA rights here, but I had a colonoscopy today. Everything's good, by the way. And 4 hours later, I'm doing heavy labor, doing all this kind of stuff, and I feel fine. So, you know, this 24 hours, don't do this, don't do that. The only thing I obeyed was to don't drive, because God forbid something happened, but it was all good.
Okay, not good, I'd ask. We'll work on the other thing. Okay. Well, I'm still on the road for a while, so continue. Okay, 2QBV, Mobile, Hackensack, New Jersey.
Be advised that we are 25 of us who've checked in tonight. That's pretty cool. This is every Thursday night. We've had really good check-ins the last couple of Thursdays, so good for everybody. Does anybody else have any questions or comments for the net?
K2VAR, W2LCS.
Mr. Rick, go right ahead.
I'm just curious what this tower is and what requires, you know, something fairly heavy. What are you talking about? It piques my interest, and I'm just wondering what this thing is.
It is a five section. I think it is heavy wall tubular tower. It has an internal cabling system that's entirely nested inside the tower, except where it rolls through the pulleys at each section. And it originally had a motor drive to raise and lower it. I obviously didn't have the motor, so I had someone weld on a ratchet drive so that I can use a half-inch ratchet handle. It takes about 2 minutes to put up. It's about 25 feet or so. And the wall thickness on this tubular tower is ridiculous. I mean, it really is a hernia and a half, even though it's all aluminum except for the cabling and the gears. But everything about it is aluminum, and it's just a beautiful piece of machinery. And, you know, you don't need to have to worry about seals. You don't have to worry about hydraulics or pneumatics. You don't have to carry any extra equipment. You know, you don't have to carry a compressor to make it up to go up and down. You literally just need to bring a ratchet handle. In fact, I have even put it up with a breaker bar, you know, a swivel breaker bars with a half-inch drive on the end. So it all works. It's pretty cool. And those of you who remember my van or my two vans over the years, that was the green tower that sat on the back of the van, not the tubular tower that I had with with the Alumna T140 like the club has. And my T140 now is mounted in my backyard on a tilt over crank up mount that it's augmented by quarter inch aluminum angle down the length of the legs of the lower section. So, but that used to be on my van, if many of you remember that, back in the days when I had two towers on the same van. So there's your answer, Rick.
It sounds pretty neat. I'm sorry I didn't get to see it, but it sounds like you're sending it to a good home, so that's terrific. Well, thank you very much. I'll send it back over to you. This is W2LPN.
I'm really at a loss for pictures with the antennas on it. I mean, there were some where the two towers were deployed. They're photographs, but I have to find the physical photographs. This was all, before digital cameras, so that was taking a lot of pictures. But I do have some of the green tower, you know, compressed on the back of the van. And basically, the bottom of it was held by a cup that's about 6 inches or so in diameter that came down and over to a hitch mount that went into a 2-inch receiver. And then, the top clipped onto the top of the van's black roof rack. And I've actually kept the last back section of that roof rack. I don't know if I'm going to keep it too long. It's a big hunk of steel is what it is. And I think what I'm going to do for now is hold on to it until the spring. And if by the spring I don't see, you know, if I still see that there's a long-term evolution to getting a heavier van that has gutter mounts, then I will dispose of that piece as well. Anyway, enough of that. Anybody else have any questions or comments?
A2EIR, I'd like to list a second question.
Okay, before you do that, I will post pictures of the van on the contact group. I'll do that tonight. I'll post a couple of them in a gallery for it. Kind of a rest in peace kind of thing. All right, go ahead, Howie. K2AR, K2BAR.
Okay, Question number one, has anyone built a shielded loop, either for receiving or transmitting, although my understanding is it's really a receiving antenna. Is there anyone in the group that's built, who has built a shielded loop antenna, preferably for 20 and up, K2EIR?
Rich, WB to WPQ has, actually. And maybe K2ZO. Jim, what do you remember about either Rich's, or have you built one yourself?
Mine was not shielded. This is K2ZO. The loop that I built was very simple. I took a hula hoop, took it apart, and then wound some insulated wire through it, I think about 8 turns. When you take the hula hoop apart, there's a little piece of wood where, just because it's a piece of PVC tubing, and, you know, just a rivet. Then I, that was the primary, and then I put a capacitor across that to tune it to resonance. And then I just had a pickup loop in parallel with it, about 2 turns, and I ran the pickup loop back to the receiver, well, in this case the transceiver, but I was using it in the receive mode, and used the preamp in the thing, and it worked quite well. I was able to listen on, you know, 160, but use had it into the auxiliary antenna position on 160 and 80 meters. But mine was not shielded. Back to that, K2ZO.
So let's just get sure we understand the wiring of this thing. 7 turns around the hula hoop inside, and then 2 turns outside, again, full size. What wires were connected where?
Oh, the internal wires, and all the wires were inside the loop, threaded through. Okay? And so you had about 6 or 7 turns, and then those 2 wires went to a capacitor. And that capacitor could be tuned so that you would peak it, and you would be able to peak the signal. The pickup had no tuning on it. It was just a couple, 2 turns to a piece of coax, and then that ran into the receiver. And that's the way it worked. And I, of course, you know, you're down as far as dBs go because it's not like a big antenna. And however, it's got great signal-to-noise ratio. And used the preamp in there, and I could hear all kinds of neat stuff on 80 and 160 and work it that you couldn't work. You know, you couldn't hear that well with the big antenna. It was great for transmitting, but it wasn't that good for receiving. Back to that.
It's on the 7-turn loop. How big a capacitor did you have on that loop?
I had an old broadcast capacitor from an old radio, which was like 365 micromic. You know, as they would say, I could take that thing and I tuned it on 160, and then I could tune it on 80. It made both with what I had. But if you do a little Google search, you can find a very simple loop antennas. Some people put a, you know, wooden rack together and wind it on there in the shape of a diamond shape or whatever. But the hula hoop idea, I saw that someone used it, and I thought, hey, that was pretty neat. And I just hung it up off the clothesline out here, and it worked good.
Okay, and the pickup loop was also inside. And when you did that, its capacitor was what, and that was in series with, I guess, the hot lead, and then the end of the pickup loop that was didn't have a capacitor on it was to ground on the shield of your receive port.
The pickup loop was inductively coupled to the existing antenna, a couple turns. And then the 2 wires from that just were untuned, unpeaked, or anything. There's no other peaking capacitor. Just went to a piece of coax and then came into the radio. And just used the preamp in the radio to make up the difference.
Gotcha. So the pickup loop was basically just 2 turns, again, through the hula hoop and nothing to it. And then the main loop had a 360 puff broadcast variable in series with the wires of the loop, of the main loop. Very nice. I guess he used like a piece of number 14 or number 12 or so inside there, insulated, just to go through the loop seven and then two more times?
I used like number 22 insulated wire and pushed it through with a piece of number 14 wire, you know, antenna wire, bare wire, to push it through the loop and around, sew it through there. That's the only way you can get it through. And it took a little time, but I got it, and it worked very well. It was unbelievable for broadcast band SWLing. You could sit here and pick a station out and move this thing left or right and sit there and listen to Fort Wayne, Indiana, or whatever you wanted, and not even hear the locals.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, I was up at Camp Terrell last weekend, and I couldn't hear... Well, I could hear WABC. It was just fine, but I couldn't hear the program I wanted to hear, so I kept switching between WJZ in Detroit, and I'm trying to remember what the ABC outlet is in Chicago. I'm just drawing a blank. But I was flipping between them because they were playing different hours of the John Batchelor show, and then they played something else after. When WABC went to infomercials at 1 a.m., I was able to listen to WJR in Detroit, I'm sorry. And I can't remember what the ABC affiliate is in Chicago, but anyway, I'm just running a blank. I should know better. But one's on 740, one's on 750, or 760, and the other one's on 770. So what I had to do was take my Sanjian radio and just position the radio according to which station I wanted to hear. The radio has plenty of good selectivity, but I needed to make sure that I oriented the radio so as to be to maximize which station I wanted to listen to for that hour. And it worked great, it really did. So something like this would take that to a whole new level and really help out. The best radio I've had around here to do AM broadcast DXing was either my any of my flexes my old Pro 3. My Pro 3 was awesome in that regard.
UNC with a question.
Good, Jim.
I was intrigued by the receiving loop antenna, and they say these antennas don't necessarily make good transmitting antennas, but they also say there's a reciprocity involved with an antenna. If it receives well, you can transmit well. So question for Jim, have you tried that loop antenna on transmitting, and just so bad, how bad was it?
There's no way you can transmit on this antenna. Absolutely no way. The loop does not even exhibit a 50-ohm impedance. It's something way, way lower than that. But with a newer style solid-state receiver, you don't really care. But no, you can't use that at all for transmitting. It's just not going to work. And it's just used for receiving. And what you do is with your transceiver, you go into the receive side where you've got the option of, you know, picking one antenna port for transmit and the other one for receive, and you spring it in that way. But, usually, again, if you're talking about a beam and you're talking about a dipole, yes, if you can hear good, you can usually transmit good. Not so on a loop-type antenna like this. Back to that.
J-E-K.
But if you had a matching device... if you could match impedances from the 50 ohms to the antenna, what would be the effect with that antenna?
No, this antenna will not transmit. It just will not work. You just burn it up, and it would just not work at all.
Yes, the reciprocity of antennas just doesn't hold true in this case.
Go ahead, Don.
another comment. I have a thing called a rock loop, and it is can be used for transmitting, but with QRP power, which some people don't like to use. They want to use a little more power, but this is the loop is made of wire and on a X piece of 1x2s and 34 inches on the side with a piece of house wire. On the one vertical side, we have in the middle, we have a capacitor, and on the other side is a transformer made with a T50-2 chloride core, and from there that goes to a coax. And to tune this thing, they have a Christmas tree lamp, one of these little 2.5 volt Christmas tree bulbs with a clip on it. And you turn the rig on and you turn the tune the capacitor so the Christmas tree light goes brightest. And I have made contact with the thing. Last time I used it, I was trying to use it with a set of batteries that weren't doing too well. But I do know for a fact that I have made contact with it. The person that originally designed it, the thing's called a rock loop. It's just Google the word rock loop, R-O-C-K-L-L-O-P. It's W9-S-C-H was the guy that originally started with this thing. Yes, you can do that. The very bandwidth is very sharp. I mean, you tune it for one frequency, and you move much from that frequency, you got to retune the thing again. MFJ has such a thing, and it has to. They have a remote tuning device, so that you don't have to be running out there to tune the thing all the time. That's up in the hundreds of bucks for that thing. Back to net.
Very good. Anybody else with comments?
K2EIR. Let me just do it quick. The problem with transmitting is capacitor voltages could go up to, with just normal power, can go up to 25 kilovolts.
W2PDQ.
We were looking for you before. We'll come back to your question in a minute, but go ahead, Rich.
One of the problems is what kind of capacitor you use. You need to go have a great separation and a place on the capacitor or a vacuum capacitor. Back to you, Gordon.
Very good. Okay, that's a good point. Anybody else? Doc.
And because this thing has a current, it's carrying quite a bit of current, and for this kind of a loop deal, the best capacitor is a split stator capacitor, so that your the two sections are separate, the fixed sections are separate, and the using the one side of the loop is connected to one fixed section, the other side of the loop is connected to the other fixed section, and the rotors of the capacitor are in other words, you're not depending on the bearings of this capacitor. It's all strictly capacitor. Or some people have made capacitors out of tubing and whatnot. There's one of those that I've seen too. So they don't have ohmic loss in the capacitor. Back to that, W2JK.
Very good. Anybody else? So the lesson is for QRP, you might be able to get away with it as long as you can match the horrendous impedance differences. And, good for you. That's pretty cool. Alrighty, K2ZO, K2BR, K2EIR, I'm sorry. Howie, it was your question.
Yeah, I really was interested in the shielded loop. Is it Rich, who's back, W2PDQ? Rich, have you ever used a shielded loop to receive?
That's a negative on a shielded loop. Everything here is something from England that is a regular loop with a, well, which the capacitor is changed to a vacuum capacitor.
Roger. Okay. No, I'm really looking for info on a shielded loop. I guess I'm going to have to try it. It shouldn't be too difficult. I don't know if I can find a capacitor. I've got them in storage. I'll just mention to Gordon that I still have one more question on a completely different topic, but let me turn it back to you to keep on going if you want to. It's getting, the hour grows late, but this topic apparently sparked a lot of interest. W2TTD from K2EIR.
I can tell you right now, I'm going to go build an unshielded loop this weekend. Just got to go figure out where I can get that capacitor, but I'll deal with that question. I'm probably going to build mine out of some hosing. In fact, what I may do, just to test it, I may get some split sleeve type stuff used for harnesses and just put my, you know, build it into that and go from there. But we'll see. We will see. That's going to be definitely one of my quickie projects come Saturday. I got some other stuff to do around the house for Christmas, but I'm going to put my Christmas lights up this weekend, folks. Why? Because I can. I feel like it. I'm in that mood. So anyway, with that in mind, anybody have any more on this before? I want to go to Rich's question, then back to Howie for his question. Don, go right ahead.
Okay, one of the QRP transceivers I built was a Tentec 20-meter QRP transceiver, and it worked good. However, the IF frequency is 6140, I believe, which is a computer crystal. But also on that frequency is a German shortwave broadcast, Deutsche Welle. And when this is connected to my ground plane antenna up on the roof, I can hear Deutsche Welle very well in the background. I said, how do I get rid of that? I put this, I hooked up the, instead of the ground plane, I hooked it up to my little rack loop antenna, turned the thing up. I could hear very well on 20 meters, and I didn't hear any of the Deutsche Welle anymore. So, it's just this piece of unshielded wire, 34 inches square, and a capacitor on one side, and a little transformer with a T50-2 on the other. Works like a charm. But, you know, that some of that stuff has worked, just because it's a sharp and tuning. Back to that, W2J again.
Okay, very good. Very good, that's interesting. Anybody else?
K2EIR, I'll just dive into this. Gordon, if you're going to build one, you want multi-turn. If you have some telephone wire around, you know, especially where it has those four solid conductors, red, green, black, and yellow, you can get four turns right there, easily threaded into either clear plastic tubing that you can buy in the hardware store or Home Depot, or get a hula hoop.
You know, that's a real good idea. Telephone cable's a real good idea, and it's not like I don't have some. In fact, I could just use Cat5 wire. No, I can't. No. Here's the problem. You have to pull the leads out first, because the twist will sit there and shield it, because the way those cables are built, the telephone cables as well as the Cat cable, you know, Cat5, it's a telephone cable is essentially Cat3, by the way. Although some of it's flat lead too, but the stuff that has twist is designed with the twist of each pair to reduce crosstalk to adjacent pairs, and the twist among the pairs is designed to reduce crosstalk among the pairs. So I think I'd have to pull the leads out and then restring it. I just couldn't use the cable as is. But good idea. Good idea to use the wire. Right? What the heck?
I meant flat cable. I had a whole long length, about 50 feet at one point, and it's easier to thread through because it's already got an insulating wrap over the four conductors, which are individually insulated. So it worked out pretty good. And they're color-coded, so you can hook it up in one continuous loop or whatever, you see if you grab the hookups. K2EIR.
Say about using quad flat lead. Yeah, that would probably work fine. The problem is, a lot of quad today, it's even twisted. If you can find it, you'll find that it's twisted. And that's interesting. But I'll see. I'll have to look through that and see what gives. Anybody else have any suggestions? And then I'm going to move on. W2PDQ, you had a comment you wanted to make earlier. K2BAR. Son of a gun. That boy comes in and goes real quick. Aaron, I have to change. This is like the third time that's happened to him on different nets. Alrighty. Let's go back to you, Howie. What is your question? K2BAR.
Okay, I heard answer time. I think for a chance to do with the delay.
Sorry, I missed what you said.
I think Rich answered you with a delay. I heard a heterodyne. Gotta check with him again.
W2PDQ, Rich, are you there with your comment?
No, Gordon. I'm going to go clear off the net. Thank you very much. You guys, have a nice evening. This is WPDQ with BAR signing off.
Hey Rich, very good, nice hearing you, and thank you for that great suggestion. Join the ComSec group. Real quick, is your email at AWRL.net by any chance?
That's a negative, Gordon. My email is at QRZ with my call.
I'll go look it up. All right, very good. You might want to join the ComSec group on Yahoo. You think you'd enjoy it. You're always tinkering with something, like those kinds of folks there. I encourage everybody to join it. It's not a club. It's just, we've just got guys from all over, mostly North Jersey, but metro area and around the country. And we try to post things. I'm right now posting Jim's HSR 412 stuff. And I already posted your Softek LED lamp. Alrighty. And let's see. How are your question? K2EIR, K2BAR.
Okay, question number two was this past week I observed when I started listening to where I stopped today, something like six consecutive days when 10 meters was open. Every daylight hour, in other words, all day long. We'll start off with Europe and end off with Western the United States and South America. I have, through five solar peaks that I remember, I don't ever remember 10 meters opening in this way. That is, for so many hours, for so many days. And someone told me this has actually been going on since October 1st. I'm just curious, because I've seen very little, like on QRZ or whatever, have other people been observing that the bands are really open? This is typical peak sunspot cycle thing, that the upper bands are alive and you don't need much, and the lower bands are dead, at least some of the time. Just wanted to know, sort of a sanity check, K2EIR.
That's happened before. Everything from aurora to some of the other stuff that goes on at the higher frequencies due to, disruptions in HF propagation in general kind of create opportunities at the higher frequencies where they trash the what I'll call the more mainstream HF frequencies. And there are tales back in the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s and 70s, during those sunspot maxima, where people would be on 10 meters at, midnight.
Well, maybe 20. That's what I remember.
Because everybody wanted to work 20. No one wanted to work 10 meters.
I remember 10, my first 2-2 regen receiver, I would hear 10 open up on summer afternoons, but it was only, you know, for a few hours. I've never heard it open all day long for so many days.
All right, I need an old-timer to bail me out. Who wants to do that?
W2JEK with a little comment.
Go ahead, Don.
You know, I noticed on the ARRL's website that there was a mention that there was some 6 meters, there was some F-layer skip that occurred a week or so ago on their website. So I guess, you know, the got up that far, certainly 10 meters was open as well. I mean, we've heard a lot of stuff on 10 meters, and always says it does get open, and some of the times it's 10 meters is open is not F A or skip, it is sporadic E, like, and the summertime openings might have been coincidental with the sporadic E like we usually hear on 6 meters, or during the winter time on my I go on the 10 meter contest at CW, and the first weekend in second and third weekend in December, and I'll be working local stations that are just out in the noise practically. They're local stations, and then all of a sudden I hear a loud station, and I found out he's out in Florida up to 6 meters, and lo and behold, 6 meters was open too. So that's part of the propagation that we get on 10 meters. But yes, during the 60s, I wasn't really that active in 58 or 68, they had a tremendous sunspot cycle. And, yes, it was, I remember going to a guy's house, W2BBK's, around midnight, work for Australia on 20 meters. So, yes, they had to stay open, just to stay open at night. So it's amazing we get back to some of this again. And, how long it's going to last, we don't know. But that's the way things are sometimes. Back to that, W2JK.
Well, very good. It's very insightful. Anybody else have tales of the old days?
K20.
Mr. James.
I can remember, you know, in the late 60s, when I was in college, in an apartment with a Ranger, Viking Ranger, 60 watts AM, with a dipole. 10 meters, working a station mobile in downtown Tokyo from the living room of my apartment on AM.
Hey, don't you just think that's awesome? Yeah, lots of stuff like that. It's just great, isn't it?
Oh, those were some unbelievable openings, but I can tell you this last round of stuff on 10 meters, especially during the contest this, last month, was better than what I've heard in 30 years.
Okay, so here's the object lesson here, guys. In early December, there is a 10-meter contest, an NRL 10-meter contest. It doesn't take much to get 10 meters rocking and rolling. You can set up a couple of dipoles in a couple of directions, or you could even set up a couple of inverted Vs in a couple of directions and even put reflectors behind them, or you could even set up a Yagi or two, even in fixed directions. And you might want to do that. Just have some fun. It doesn't have to be real high. It just has to be. And this sounds like one of those years where you might have some fun in the 10-meter contest. So think about it. And get active on it. Even maybe, heaven forbid, you know, take your buddy pole out there and with the vehicle and sit in the car for, you know, 8 hours and beat your brains in and have a good old time, you know, in some decent place. Alrighty. Any other thoughts?
W2JEK, you know, father had a mobile in the car, had a pastor mobile antenna. Center loaded. For 10 meters, he did had a shorting strap that he put across the loading coil to make it resonant on 10 meters. Of course, loaded this up with the Harvey Wells transmitter in the trunk of the car. Not just tri-band converter in those days. But, you know, an 8-foot vertical with a couple of radio brothers set something up on up high at the house even. It took a few minutes to duct tape it to a chimney or whatever. you could do something like that.
And that's the key point. It does not take, you know, a lot to do. It really doesn't. So, you know, consider that. It really is something worthwhile to do, and go from there. Get on the air. That's the bottom line. You know, plan that 10-meter contest. I think it's the first weekend in December, isn't it?
I think it's the second. I think it's the second or third. I have to get my book out because I think the 160-meter goes first.
Okay. Yeah, someone could quickly Google that. I've got a lot going here in my shack right now. But, yeah, I think it'd be something to think about. I know the first weekend in December, my troop, my Boy Scout troop, is going camping, but just on Saturday night to the Project Diana site, which was the old Terra's satellite tracking site down at Camp Evans, which is where the Marconi station is, and the Info Age is the museum that's there now, and all sorts of other things, but we're going to be down there, and we're going to be guested. We're guests of Allmark, and we're going to spend that fateful night of December 7th, or day and night, playing ham radio games, doing a lot of cooking, a little camping, and hearing stories. Some of the guys who are actually members of OMARC served in the Army and were on site there during its glory days, and have stories to tell of both some humorous security things and lighting up local fluorescent lights like 10 miles away and inadvertently, and police issues that comes up with that and things like that. Pretty funny, but we're going to probably operate a little bit of 10 meters while we're there, because several of our boys have technician licenses, so we're going to get them on the air and get them on HF, that's even if it's 10 meters.
KUJK.
Go ahead, Doc.
Okay, the 160-meter contest comes first. That's the 6th to the 8th on December. And the 10-meter contest is the 14th to the 15th. And at the end of the month of January, of course, is the straight key night. And there's a rookie roundup, which is on the 22nd of December, which is a CW operation. Back to
that, W2JK. Sounds like a great idea. Well, unfortunately, we're camping the first weekend, and Hampest is the second weekend, so we'll be fine. We'll make good use of it and have a great time. That second weekend, I'll probably operate in the evening when I'm home. Late afternoon and evening, after the Hamfest and the flea market and stuff on that second weekend. Pretty good. It sounds exciting. Anybody else have anything to add to this?
B2J, you got one more?
Go right ahead.
The Thanksgiving weekend is the CW contest, and there will be people out on the expeditions to activate various DX locations, and they may be on sideband or CW, or both boats, before and after the contest, too. Don't work CW if I catch some of the X stations on these bands during the before and after the CW contest itself.
Okay. That's good to know. That's real good to know. Anybody else have any thing they want to add to this? All right. Well, Don, thank you very much. Are there any stations at this point with additional questions? Actually, no, pardon me. Howie, back to you on this one, since you raised the question of 10-meter propagation and the its various odd forms.
Okay. K2EIR, I'm just trying to remember because there was one comment I was going to make. But yeah, you know, we used to use AM. Maybe I should say. And it worked. The beauty of 10 meters is that, you know, there's plenty of room. You know, before the FM repeaters, you had the whole band. There was never any crowding, you know. I don't know if there were pileups, but, you know, certainly for when you might, New York might hear Arizona and have a contact, you had a nice, quiet background. You could have a rag chew if you want, and you could have lots of those conversations going on because the band was so big, it still is. So, yeah, it's nice. But I really, personally, have never experienced what I've been hearing. And I'm only sorry I've been listening through linked repeaters rather than getting on there. But I passed the news to my brother that the band was open, and I encouraged him to go on. So he fired back to me that he did, and that he worked 20 countries. So it's kind of great. I wish I did that. So I got your point. Maybe I will take my antennas out into the field and get some operating. I'll have to figure out what spot. What I need is, a water closet close by. I'll say 73. If you hang around after that for a minute or two, and I can hear the tiredness in your voice because it really is late, you can tell me about the Boy Scout weekend. If not, I understand. W2TTT from K2EIR.
I'll break it into two pieces real quick. Regarding your operating, since that is the Hamfest weekend, you come out to the Hamfest. You announce to your wife and daughter that they have to fend them for themselves that day. You come out to the Hamfest, have a wonderful nosh with everybody, socialize, peruse the Hamfest, and then what you do is you go to the State Line Lookout. And you go to the State Line Lookout for the day, and until 5 o'clock the bathrooms are open, and they have porta potties there. I think they chase you out just after 5 anyway, because I think it's dark at this point. But they have real bathrooms inside, and you're welcome to use those, and operate from the State Line Lookout. And then when you're done, you just either jump on the Tappan Zee or jump on George Washington. I guess the Tappan Zee would be better. And you go home. And you're home for supper, and tell your wife you'd be home at 6 o'clock or 6:30 for dinner, and we'll go from there. Tell her better. You'll take her out for dinner after you've disappeared all day.
Okay, we'll have to consider that.
So that's how you handle your day at the Hamfest and play ham radio on the second Saturday of December. Now, you can Google Project Diana, and I encourage people to do so. You also can Google Info Age. You'll find out that's one of the original Marconi stations down here in Monmouth County. But it was an outpost. It's called Camp Evans of Fort Monmouth. And as you know, there are all sorts of signals work done at Fort Monmouth, a lot of interesting development over the years. It's a high-tech center of R&D, leveraging all sorts of expertise from Bell Labs and from the Sarnoff Labs down on Route 1 and other places. Lots of different folks had interesting things there. Many, many contractors over many, many decades during the war and after the war, etc. And right up through the 1970s, if I remember right. So, anyway, the Info Age Museum is pretty cool, but so is the Project Diana site, which features a 60-foot parabola
which is being largely overhauled with monies from Princeton University, but they will be assigned times, and all the EME weekends will be included in that, and at least one weekend a month for EME to be able to blast Sirius RF into the sky. A 60-foot dish is big enough so you can actually use it not just for 432 and above EME, you can use it on 2 meters. So we're looking forward to them being able to, you know, rock that baby around a little bit and put a signal on the moon. Needless to say, I'd like to get a shot at that. I haven't done EME in 30 years, and that would be way cool. Actually, it's coming up on 40 years, which is even scarier. But, well, wait, was it 1981 or 2? Probably 81 or 2 last time I did EME. So there you go, Howie.
Okay, well, very good. By the way, I've been keenly aware that this spring I'll be licensed 50 years. I want to say, another thing for your scouts, I saw keywords at forum type item, news item, that there's going to be something like 27 more satellites on the air very shortly, CubeSats and all that kind of thing, you know, carrying amateur radio, so it might be good for the scouts. K2EIR.
I saw that, and actually, one of my former office mates, was mentoring him, you know, 20 years ago or more. His first job was Bell Labs, and he was my office mate, and I was his mentor. He has since left the company and went to work for the FAA. He's been with the FAA probably for almost 20 years now. But in any case, he recently got his call. His name is Naeem Hulk, H-O-Q, and Naeem is really excited about space and things like that. Another ham, Don Wormley, who's since passed away, used to live in Scotch Plains, and Don had some really interesting audio equipment way back when, and what we did was we actually did meteor scatter work where we actually I would send dits on a scheduled methodology and then ID every so often. And he would actually listen for the echo. They were spaced so that you could listen for the echo off of the meteor trails. And from that we could calculate, he could hear my signal but at a low amplitude. And he'd hear the reflection with all the distortion off of the meteor trails. And so we were able to throw it on a scope and actually determine the velocity of the range of the meteor trail from where we were doing meteor scatter. It was awesome.
Can imagine seeing it visually in particular.
Yeah, we did that about 20 years ago, and Don since died of cancer, but Naeem was as my office mate, he got involved in seeing how that would work, and he always loved space and weather, things like that, and so he really always had it in his head that he would get his ham license, and ultimately did. So it was kind of neat to watch that evolution, but it took 20 years, and he finally got off his TUFA and got his ham license, and we're real proud of him. In fact, another colleague of mine left the labs more recently, maybe about 8 years ago, and went to work down there. He still lives in New Jersey, but 4 days a week he works in Washington. And he's got a small apartment down there. And he comes home Thursday night, works from home on Fridays, and then on Monday morning goes down to Washington again. works in the office there, but he's in the next office from him. It's really kind of neat. So, and this guy, the second guy, used to be my supervisor, but he was an old friend. And when I went to work for him, I went to work for him, so I, you know, could have some fun doing something different at the labs, and it was all good. Anyway, anybody else have anything they want to talk about?
All righty, I think I'm going to close down the net, though. It is 11 o'clock, so I think, Howie, I'm going to call it square and crawl down the stairs and make sure Jeremy's home and go to bed.
Sounds like a plan. I second it, at least in my own case, at 73. Thanks for the net. As always, you do a great job. It's good to know you. W2TTT, this is K2EIR, probably the closing station.
I'm also going to post to the list ACGGI's question about JT65 frequency agility and not having to go back to the rate control menu to make it happen. All right, 73, have a good one. This is K2BAR, thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater, encouraging people to join Chestnut Ridge as well as Farallon, et cetera, et cetera. At some point tomorrow for Farallon, I should be there, and my guess is I'll be back around as well. If you are absolutely dependent on my being there, give me a phone call first or shoot me an email. Phone calls are probably best. If you have an email from me, you have my phone number. You can either text me or call me, because we may have some transportation issues and our coordination issues for tomorrow. But all in all, my plan is to be at Farallon, plus or minus all the logistics. So, thanks again to everybody, and enjoy. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, retrained repeaters and all amateur radio use.
got a lot going on at the shop tonight?
I got one Ford here. The guys complain about hard start when it's hot. I got to do a service on it. It's got over 100,000 miles on it. It's never been tuned up.